I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. South Jersey Gas wants to build a natural gas pipeline through a section of the New Jersey Pinelands Natural Reserve. It would allow a power plant to convert from coal to gas and would require a special exemption from the Pinelands Commission, which is scheduled to vote later this month. It has sparked a debate over energy and the environment in New Jersey. Four former New Jersey governors, Byrne, Florio, Kane, and Whitman, wrote a letter opposing construction of the pipeline. Well, today in Radio Times, we hear a pro and a con, and we begin our conversation with Robert Fatzinger, Senior Vice President for Engineering and System Integrity for South Jersey Gas. And Robert Fatzinger, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Nice to be with you.
So why does South Jersey need to build a pipeline through the Pinelands?
The pipeline actually is about 22 miles long, and we're building it really for two primary purposes. The first purpose is to serve the BL England Generating Station in Upper Township, which is converting from coal to run on natural gas. But the second reason, which is equally as important, is to significantly improve the reliability of service for our South Jersey Gas customers in Cape May and Atlantic counties. We have about 140,000 customers that live in those two counties that are at risk of a significant lengthy outage if we have a problem on the existing single pipeline that we feed that area with today. So the construction of this pipeline will also provide a redundant feed to those customers. So really, is being built to serve two benefits.
But why through the Pinelands? Why not find an alternate route?
We actually spent probably close to a year investigating different routes. And in the end, we boiled it down to three that we thought were the most likely routes to evaluate. And in conversations with the Pinelands staff, the Department of Environmental Protection, the Board of Public Utilities, we determined that this route that we chose, which travels actually along an existing state highway, was the best route to take. The other two actually had more significant impacts to the environment, to the wetlands, and it was agreed by everybody involved with the project that this was the ideal route and the most common sense route for us to take.
But can you guarantee there won't be a break in a pipeline or some kind of explosion like we saw with deep water to impact, for instance, the water, the aquifer within the Pinelands?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, natural gas pipelines that are built today are really among the safest types of pipelines that have ever been built. It's very rare to see a new pipeline that's constructed have any kind of problems. We build our pipelines to the most stringent federal standards, which is sort of unique to the state of New Jersey, that they require us to build to that stringent standard, whether it's needed or not from a federal point of view. So our view is that as we build the pipeline, we've designed it in such a way that there's very little, if any, chance we're going to have any problem with that line during or after construction. And then once it is constructed, we actually have a very comprehensive integrity management program that's regulated by both the federal and state governments to make sure that that pipeline continues to operate safely for years.
As you said, you looked at three routes and decided with others that the one that would go through a part of the Pinelands is the best. Is the best for South Jersey Gas, the best for your customers, the best for whom?
It's actually the best for all parties, and including the environment. The other two routes, one of the routes actually cut directly through the Pinelands down an old railroad right-of-way that had grown over. And the other one came across the bay from the mainland side. And both of those routes actually had more environmental impact than this route. We're actually constructing this route through the Pinelands along or under a state highway. So there's not going to be any deforestation or fragmentation of the forest or anything like that. The line will be built along the road, and when we're done, you won't know we were there.
Are we talking about buried pipelines or above-ground pipelines or a combination of both?
The pipeline will actually be buried 4 feet below grade for most of the route that goes through the Pinelands. And we actually have a few what are called horizontal directional drills, where we'll actually drill the pipeline under the road and under existing waterways, and we'll be, in some cases, 60 feet underground at that point in time.
as you know, and as I said in my introduction, four former governors of New Jersey, two Republicans, two Democrats, are in opposition to this pipeline. And part of what they wrote in their letter was the current proposal would compromise the integrity of the Pinelands plan and serve to encourage further development contrary to the vision of the plan set out for growth and conservation in the Pinelands. I think in many ways their letter is directed to the Pinelands Commission, but nonetheless it has to do with this pipeline. What would you say to those four governors?
I would say that as many people as are opposed to it, and I'm aware of the letter, there are an equal number of people that are in favor of the project. And we've been working very closely with the Pinelands Commission staff for well over a year, and they believe strongly that the route we're taking, which involves really a memorandum of agreement to be executed between the Pinelands and the Board of Public Utilities in New Jersey, is the way to go. And that approach is actually contemplated and allowed within the Pinelands rules. So there's, I think, a little bit of disagreement as far as whether that's the case or not. But Pinelands staff does feel very strongly that we're taking the right approach, and we agree with that.
So you think the Pinelands Commission will agree with this pipeline proposal?
That's my desire, that they'll see the benefits and the fact that we've looked at all possibilities. And as a matter of fact, the Pinelands staff itself looked at four routes independent of us and concluded that none of those routes were adequate to meet both of the requirements that we have in this project, which is to serve the plant as well as to provide the reliability of service for our customers.
I do want to get to some callers, but I know that South Jersey Gas gave the Pinelands Fund something like $8 million. What is that money for?
Well, the part of the memorandum of agreement, the process requires us to provide what's called equal protection of the Pinelands, and that is a provision that allows this memorandum of agreement to put us in compliance with Pinelands rules. So the Pinelands staff actually calculates what it is that needs to be done in order for us to provide equal protection of the Pinelands. And in this case, what they were looking to do is to primarily purchase land along the right-of-way where we'll be building this pipeline to ensure that there won't be any other development that occurs because the pipeline is being constructed. So they came up with the amount of land that they felt needed to be purchased, what they felt the price was going to be, and that's how we came up with the $8 million number.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about a proposal from South Jersey Gas to build a natural gas pipeline through the New Jersey Pinelands Natural Reserve. And we're talking with Bob Fatzinger. He's Senior Vice President for Engineering and System Integrity for South Jersey Gas. We'll be talking with Jeff Tittle, Director of New Jersey Sierra Club, after a break. But nonetheless, I do want to take some calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get, looks like Georgina from Ocean City, New Jersey, to join us. Georgina, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. Listening to the conversation and Mr. Fatzinger, it seems like the pipeline is just going to go along existing highways. And in fact, that is not completely true. There's going to be horizontal drilling under 14 streams, two ponds, and a river. And even if it is along the highways for 300 feet on either side of the drilling, there's going to be an impact on the habitat of the Pinelands. So I think it's disingenuous of him. There are almost 20,000 people who've signed up against this. And it's in violation of the Comprehensive Management Plan of the Pinelands Commission. And it would appear that Mr. Fatzinger is putting the burden on the staff of the commission for suggesting it, and they're just going along. So just it's completely opposed to this. Well, and I live in the shadow of the BL England coal plant for 28 years, and I don't see gas there as an improvement. I see it as detrimental to, you know, our planet with climate change.
All right, Georgina, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Bob Fatzinger, let me give you a chance to respond, especially her comments about the streams and ponds and river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were actually a number of comments there that expressed some of the sentiment that's been raised by people who are opposed to the project. And just to clarify, the horizontal directional drills, which Georgina speaks about, actually travel under the roadway. So it's not actually a drill that goes directly under the water. The entire pipeline stays within the right-of-way of the road. And that seems to be a little bit of a misconception that people have, that because there's water on up either side of the road, that we're actually drilling under the water. But that's not the case as we traverse the state highway. As I said, everything stays within the state highway.
One of the other things that she raises, and I think this goes back to the comprehensive management plan of the Pinelands, is that a pipeline would have to, quote, you know, serve the needs primarily of the Pinelands. How would this pipeline serve the needs of the Pinelands? I can understand your customers, but how about the Pinelands themselves?
Yeah, the project actually will benefit on the gas side, about 30,000 natural gas customers that live in the Pinelands, and actually most of the electric output from the BL England station will serve the needs of the Pinelands. But with that said, we do agree that the project does not meet the comprehensive management plan requirement that it be built primarily to benefit the Pinelands. The memorandum of agreement that I spoke about is the way to make that happen. There is a provision in the Pinelands rules that allow another public entity, in this case it would be the Board of Public Utilities, to enter in an agreement with the Pinelands Commission that would allow us to build this pipeline. And that agreement, along with the equal protection payment, actually puts us in compliance with the comprehensive management plan. There seems to be a little bit of misunderstanding or disagreement about that, but that's how we view this, that we will be in compliance with the plan when the memorandum gets executed.
And about a minute before we have to say goodbye, why not just shut BLM, New England Power, just shut it down? That's to you.
The BL England Generating Station actually is going to be critical to the electric needs of South Jersey. In 2019, Oyster Creek Generating Station will be going out of service, and BL England will be really the only major generating source on the eastern side of the state. So it's really critical from the Board of Public Utilities' point of view that plant stay operational, which is why they're so supportive of the repowering of that plant for the future needs of the residents of South Jersey.
And switching from coal to natural gas?
That is required because of environmental restrictions, but it was actually pointed out by the Department of Environmental Protection recently that there will be significant benefits to the air that will benefit not only the people that live outside the Pinelands, but all the residents of the Pinelands and the infrastructure of the Pinelands itself.
Well, Robert Fetzinger, thank you for joining us and for getting our conversation started.
Thank you, Marty. It was great to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you as well. Senior Vice President for Engineering and System Integrity for South Jersey Gas. So we have Jeff Tittle, Director of the New Jersey Sierra Club, waiting in the wings.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents the Jazz Orchestra of Philadelphia's Comin' Home concert on Tuesday, January 7th in Verizon Hall, with host Bill Cosby and an array of performances by Wynton Marsalis, Jimmy Heath, Kenny Barron, Randy Brecker, Bootsy Barnes, and more. Comin' Home is a multi-generational offering of music and musicians that best represent Philly jazz. Information at KimmelCenter.org or 215-893-1999.
Few reporters know Washington like NPR's Cokie Roberts. Hi, I'm Dave Davies, inviting you to join me for a timely and in-depth discussion I'll be hosting with Cokie at the Merriam Theater Thursday, January 23rd. Call 1-888-345-9499 and make a $10 a month sustaining membership gift to WHYY. We'll send you two tickets to this event as our way of saying thanks. Again, that's 1-888-345-9499 to make your sustaining contribution and reserve your seats now. Thanks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, some of the bloodiest fighting of the Iraq War happened during the siege of Fallujah. Now Al-Qaeda militants control the city, which could be the hub of a new insurgency. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Natural gas has been in the news in New Jersey. The Pinelands Commission is going to vote, looks like, later this month on whether to approve a 22-mile-long natural gas pipeline through a portion of the Pinelands Natural Preserve, a protected section of New Jersey forests, aquifers, and endangered species. We just said goodbye to Robert Fatzinger from South Jersey Gas, the company that wants to build the pipeline. And now we say hello to Jeff Tittle. He's the director of the New Jersey Sierra Club. And Jeff Tittle, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Glad to be back, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. And our phones have exploded at 1-888-477-9499. Jeff, why do you and your organization, why do you oppose this pipeline?
Well, I think that this pipeline is dangerous for multiple reasons besides the chance of explosion, and I totally disagree, and we can prove so many times where these pipelines have been built where there have been problems. Could just go to Edison, New Jersey, or Bellingham, Washington. But more importantly, the Pinelands were set aside as almost a million-acre wild area in the state of New Jersey, the most densely populated state in the middle of the most densely populated region of the country. And there are more than 29 plant species and other things that are found in the Pinelands, found nowhere else, and that's why it's a UN Biosphere Reserve. This pipeline going through the middle of the forest preserve violates not only a comprehensive management plan, but the Pinelands Act. And the reason it does that, and it sets a dangerous precedent, is because when the Pinelands Act was passed and when the CMP was put together, they looked at the potential of, you know, linear corridors for infrastructure, like for energy, and they kept it out deliberately. And that's why four governors sent the letter to the commission. These were the governors that actually helped write and implement the Pinelands Act. So they know. And it's the first time I've ever seen four governors get together to send a letter on a specific project. You know, they'll do it for we need to fund arts or something like that, but on a specific project, because it's that dangerous. And it's dangerous not only from an environmental standpoint, but also from a precedent standpoint. And this is the part that I think people don't understand. The memorandum of understanding, the process that they're using, is for governmental entities only, not for a private, for-profit utility. The MOA's process is used, let's say, if the parkway is going to fix an interchange. They go through an MOA process with the Pinelands Commission to do that, or a town is putting in a water tank, not for private development. So if you can do it for this private gas line, then what's to stop the Casino Control Commission, which regulates casinos just like the BPU regulates utilities, to come in for a casino in the Pinelands, or the Council of Affordable Housing to come in to build a housing development in the Pinelands, or the Department of Environmental Protection to come in and get an MOA for a company like Covanta to build an incinerator? This opens a Pandora's box that undoes the whole Pinelands Comprehensive Management Plan, and that's why it's so dangerous.
Well, Jeff, let me ask a couple of follow-up questions, and I do want to get some callers in on the conversation as well. But there is support for this this pipeline from some business groups, from some unions, or at least a union, supported by the State Board of Public Utilities, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So there is support. I mean, clearly there are critics,
well,
but
the
there
Army
is
Corps
support.
Gave a permit. They don't support projects.
Okay, but they did give a permit.
The unions and the other groups are getting money out of this, just like they're trying to give $8 million to the Pinelands Commission to support this project. That's called Pinelands Pay to Play. The people who are in support of this project are all those who are looking to economically benefit from it. The people of New Jersey and the people who live in the region do not want this pipeline because it's going to mean more fracking in Pennsylvania and fracking gas. It's going to mean more air pollution from a power plant that was supposed to close that will now be repowered with natural gas, making it the largest greenhouse gas emitter in all of South Jersey. So if you think about the stakes that are involved here, they're huge.
But it seems to converting from coal to natural gas would probably, it's probably not perfect, but would be a benefit, would it not?
What he failed to tell you is that currently that plant only operates 30 to 40 days a year as a peaking plant. Now they want to operate it as a baseload plant where it operates 365 days a year. So the amount of pollution that's going to come from it, especially from methane and greenhouse gases, will be exponential. That plant should close. We don't need the plant. And this is another where he played a game. He said, you know, talked about Oyster Creek. The power from Oyster Creek doesn't go to Cape May County. It goes to Ocean County. The power where most of Atlantic County gets its power from are from the Salem nuclear power plants that are still operating. So this plant has nothing to do with reliability if Oyster Creek closes. The other thing, and this is very important, The state of New Jersey has put in 1,100 megawatts of solar. We have proposals for 1,100 megawatts of offshore wind right off the site. On top of that, the state has approved 2,600 megawatts of new gas-fired power plants around the state, four times the generation potential out of this facility that's under construction. If the BPU really wanted this plant, they actually gave subsidies for three of those plants to be built. This plant applied for that subsidy and didn't get it and wasn't part of the BPU list of actually needed plants. So this is a speculative plant. There's no reason, you know, that it's being, you know, pushed upon the people of South Jersey. And on top of it, they don't tell you that there's no cooling towers, and this would be the first plant in the country that would be repowered from coal and natural gas without cooling towers, which it has a direct impact on the bay. Thermal pollution, impingement of sea life. There's a lot of things wrong with this facility that they're proposing, and there's a lot more even wrong with this pipeline.
One more question, then I do want to get back to our callers. Do you have an argument with the Pinelands Commission?
Well, I think that the fact that they are, that staff negotiated behind closed doors for close to a year without the public knowing about it is problematic. This is being pushed by the governor's office, and part of it is because the law firm that is handling the BL England power plant is Wolf and Sampson, and David Sampson is not only head of the Port Authority and part of the whole GW Bridge stuff, but is one of the Christie's closest advisors. So this is more about politics than it is about energy policy.
And that's Jeff Tittle, director of the New Jersey Sierra Club. We are talking about, in this portion of Radio Time today, a proposed pipeline that would go through part of the Pinelands Natural Preserve, a protected section of New Jersey. We began our conversation talking with a representative from South Jersey Gas. That's the company that wants to build the pipeline. And clearly, Jeff Tittle, director of the New Jersey Sierra Club, in opposition. Let me see what Margot from Medford Lakes has to say. Margot, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Aloha. Yes, I was curious about what Mr. Tittle thought about how the staff, I mean, and he kind of just answered that. But, you know, I have to tell you, as a taxpayer who values the Pinelands Commission and understands that when it was, you know, first set up back in 79, that, you know, it was designed to prevent this kind of thing from happening because, you know, if that road is pre-existing, this parcel of land, they realized this was an extremely valuable, for so many reasons, parcel of land that they needed to set aside. And there were big, huge pressures then to develop. And now we're seeing it again. And this is why the commission needs to say no, in my mind. But I have to tell you, as a taxpayer, I'm appalled that the staff has been working with the South Jersey Gas Company to help find the best route. I mean, my tax dollars go to pay them to protect the Pinelands. So I'm really just confused. You know, why is the Pinelands Commission then set up? And or we know why it was set up, but why is it being now used as a conduit for industry?
Well, Margot, let me see what our guest Jeff Tittle has to say. Jeff, how do you understand that?
Well, I think that's part of the problem is that the Pinelands Commission is supposed to be working to preserve and protect the Pinelands. That is their charge. And the fact is that the governor's office is using undue political pressure on some of the commissioners and the staff itself, I think shows why this is a dirty deal for dirty power. And I wanted to go back to a couple of things that was said before where the guy from the gas company said there's 30,000 gas companies. No, there's 3,000.
In the Pinelands.
In the Pinelands, yes. He's counting people who live in Burlington County 50 miles away from this pipeline. There's less than 3,000 in the Pinelands portion where this pipeline runs. He says it's for redundancy for people in Atlantic County. This doesn't connect to Atlantic County. He would have to drill under the bay, which he said he wouldn't do to connect to Atlantic County. So that's also false. The reason I want to bring that up is because this pipeline carries enough gas for 270,000 homes, and there's less than 30,000 year-round homes in Cape May County. Why are we getting all that gas? Could it be for offshore LNG export at some point? We really don't know. And the other point is that we don't even know where the power, if this power plant gets repowered, goes to, because New Jersey is actually awash in energy, according to the PJM, which is the regional grid. There's so many new plants coming online, this plant isn't needed. So there's something more going on here, and I think that's a concern, especially if you're a South Jersey Gas Company ratepayer who not only has to pay for this pipeline, but has to pay $8 million of your ratepayer money to give to the commission as sort of a sweetener to get them to approve something. And the concern that we have is, once government goes down the road of cash and carry, where we'll give you money to approve a project, it opens up a real Pandora's box of corruption. So, you know, some developer will come into, you know, the DEP, the Pinelands Commission, the Highlands Commission, you know, the Highlands Commission, you know, give us, we'll give you $10 million, let us, you know, let us build a garbage dump next to a reservoir. It's a really dangerous precedent.
Margot, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me quote something from those four New Jersey governors speaking, I think, in slightly different language from what you're using, Jeff, but they wrote, having served in government, we understand the reasons that are presented, often compelling, to waive environmental protections in what may seem at the time to be unique or extraordinary cases. We believe, however, the Pinelands program will only work over the long term if the plan is implemented consistently. And again, these are four governors in opposition to this pipeline.
Yes, and the one thing that it's interesting in the game that they're playing, they're saying they're a governmental entity to come in to try to qualify for a memorandum of agreement, which they actually don't. And as I said, this will be the death of 1,000 MOAs. There's another executive order called Executive Order 215 that says all governmental projects have to do an environmental impact statement. Well, guess what? The Pinelands Commission isn't requiring them to do an impact statement. So on one hand, they're treating them as a governmental entity for the purpose of writing this illegal and immoral MOA, but for the purpose of doing an environmental impact statement, they're waiving that. Mm-hmm. They're saying they're not a governmental entity. And I think that proves the hypocrisy in this because, again, if this was a federal project under FERC, there'd have to be a EIS process, an environmental state process with public participation and outside independent experts to analyze the impact of this pipeline. There's none of that going on. In fact, when you go to the Pinelands Commission meeting, all the information from the staff is directly from South Jersey Gas Company, not even the BPU. And so, again, this is government, you know, not serving the public but serving special interests.
Let me get looks like Carlton from Medford, New Jersey, to join our conversation. And, Carlton, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi.
Great discussion.
Thank you.
What I would like to stress is that this is a really seminal issue for the Pinelands and for its future. It isn't just about this one case anymore. The fact that the Pinelands Commission staff is being given the credit for a project that clearly violates an express provision and a fundamental provision of the Pinelands program is very disturbing, and it indicates that the commission is at a sort of turning point. It's 34 years old now, and that original pioneering spirit that created this amazing program, which has preserved hundreds of thousands of acres of forest in, as people have said, the most crowded state in the nation, is really at risk. The only reason all those acres of forest are still there is that the Pinelands Commission, for whatever faults it's had over the last 34 years, has always respected the distinction between forest and preservation areas, which are for conservation of natural resources, and growth areas, which is where the development is encouraged and supposed to go, the development like this kind of infrastructure.
Right.
They've always respected that distinction. We're now seeing this creeping process of beginning to break down those barriers.
Well, Carlton, let me take that,
I think, is why it's so important that this case be treated properly.
And I should say to our listeners that we will do at least a request to the Pinelands Commission for their commentary. But let me give Jeff Tittle a chance to respond to what Carlton just said.
I agree completely, because I think if you can do this project through this process, then there is no more Pinelands Act or comprehensive management plan, that it becomes every private entity can come in, ask a government agency, and give them some money to approve a project. This is the undoing of the plan. This is the biggest threat that the Pinelands has seen in the 34 years since it's put in place. And I think it's even more important than people realize. Not only is this a place where people camp and hike and canoe, it's also the largest freshwater aquifer on the entire eastern seaboard, you know, with 17 trillion gallons. And, you know, what they also fail to look at is the impact directly from the pipeline as well. All the methane gas and air pollution from that pipeline cutting through. And you have to understand, when you talk about safety issues, the Pinelands has naturally occurring forest fires. They happen all the time. Putting a pipeline through the middle of a forest preserve area where there are naturally occurring forest fires that can happen any and all time, and they're part of the life cycle of the pines, is, you know, a disaster waiting to happen. There's just so many things wrong about it, everything from, you know, fracking in Pennsylvania and the water pollution that would impact the Delaware, you know, running this pipeline through the, you know, through this area, and then all the air pollution from this power plant that was set to close. This is a project that, you know, everything is wrong, you know, it's wrong, is this project, and if you can do a project that's this bad, then you could do almost anything, and I think that's what makes this so dangerous.
Let me, Carlton, thanks for the call. Let me see what looks like Ellen from Vineland, New Jersey has to say. And Ellen, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for your program.
You're
morning.
Welcome.
I really, my points have been made by past callers and just by Mr. Tittle, but regarding the safety issues, excuse me, and the ecology of the Pinelands and keeping it preserved, he talked about fires. I mean, they do controlled fires. How are we going to have, you know, for the preservation of the Pinelands, how are we going to have anything like that that keeps the integrity of the Pinelands and the varied species alive when the other gentleman from South Jersey Gas talked about the safety and how safe it is. How can a gas line be safe regarding where, how it's placed along the highway, the horizontal placement? A gas line, it can't always be safe.
I think you just have to.
Okay, Ellen, I appreciate the call. Go ahead, Jeff Diddle.
I was going to say, I think you just have to go to Edison, New Jersey, or Bellingham, Washington, or Burlingame, California, and so many other places. There's at least one major gas pipeline accident a month in this country, and many of them are new pipelines, and so that's true. Also, the pipeline itself becomes a corridor for invasive species. Not only are you cutting down, you know, trees and forests along the way, but you're opening up parts of the forest for more invasive species, including the southern pine beetle, which is a threat to the, you know, the forest as well. And so no matter how you try to spin it, it's still a pipeline that's going to cut a scar through the Pinelands. It's still going to bring fracking gas and encourage fracking in Pennsylvania. It's still going to a large greenhouse gas emitter, a power plant that's, by the way, in an area that's subject to storm surge. You look at this and you cannot understand the real, any logic behind it. When I was a young 18-year-old put on my town's planning board, a wise old planning board chair who was 45 said to me, if you can't figure out the logic, it's probably corruption.
I can understand someone might saying that to you off the air. I think you have to be careful saying that on the air, Jeff Tittle, accusing people of corruption.
Let me say it this way.
Sure, we're almost out of time, but go ahead.
The only reason the Pinelands Commission is looking to approve it is $8 million. If this was such a good project, it would be on its own. And I think that's the concern that we have, is that once government starts accepting money to do special projects, to approve projects, that's the corruption of government that I'm talking about. It's the special interests. It's not specific payoffs. It's the government itself becomes a corrupt enterprise.
Well, I'm sure we will revisit this topic. Jeff Tittle, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And he's director of the New Jersey Sierra Club. Waiting in the wings and shifting gears, talking about Pennsylvania, Katie Colinieri, reporter for State Impact Pennsylvania and for WHYY, joining us after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Jesse Thorne. I host Bullseye. Take pity on our poor intern, Brian. We sat him down at a computer and handed him a stack of comedy albums as high as an elephant's eye. He spent days listening to stand-up, weeks even, searching for the very best of 2013. Well, he accomplished his goal, and we'll share the results with you this week on Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
After England and France went to war with Germany in 1939, there was a ferocious debate in America over whether the U.S. should come to their aid or go even further and enter the war. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the isolationists and interventionists with Lynn Olson, author of Those Angry Days, Roosevelt, Lindbergh, and America's Fight Over World War II. It's coming out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Politics by natural causes. When the snow falls, so do the chips.
We have a serious and significant winter storm.
I am urging everyone to stay indoors.
Something like a snowstorm, I take very personally.
The political risks of dangerous blizzards. Who's in the storm track of bad weather when leadership comes down to snow days, plows, and power lines? Next time on The Takeaway.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Motz-Cohen. Pennsylvania has become the fastest growing state in the country for natural gas production, beating out Texas because of the development of the Marcellus Shale. Late last year, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court called a provision of Act 13 that limited local municipalities' ability to regulate gas drilling unconstitutional. Well, that sent shockwaves through the industry and through the Corbett administration. We'll be talking about what this means and other natural gas news and developments in the Commonwealth. And joining us is Katie Culinary, reporter covering energy and the environment for State Impact Pennsylvania and for WHYY. And Katie Culinary sitting across from me. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here. Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome. So help us understand what that means, that Pennsylvania is now the fastest has become the number one state for natural gas production.
Yeah, well, this is actually a really big deal. I mean, it's kind of been, you know, a really obvious fact for the last several years, the last 5 years of the natural gas boom in Pennsylvania, that, you know, we're up there with the really big natural gas producing states. But what the Energy Information Administration did, it's a federal agency that tracks energy development in the United States, did in their kind of end of the year analysis last month, was to sort of show that Pennsylvania has now gone from the third highest natural gas producing state to being the second behind Texas, which we think of as, you know, the big oil and gas state. So that's kind of a really, you know, big pat on the back for those who've been really, you know, pushing the development of this industry in Pennsylvania and kind of paving the way for even more natural gas development here.
We don't see it so much in this part of Pennsylvania, but other parts of Pennsylvania must look very different because of this.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've now been out on a couple of reporting trips to shale country, as they call it. And, you know, you can't necessarily see all the natural gas infrastructure, you know, from the highway. But, you know, when you get into these sort of, you know, rural towns and you pass signs for well pads, you see tons of trucks coming up and down these dirt roads. I've had to kind of steer my little Ford Focus out of the way a few times. So a lot of really big changes. Hotels are really full. A new giant hospital was just opened in Susquehanna County.
Wow.
So it's really changed life up there, to be sure.
Help us understand what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, what they decided or what they did last month. They struck down a part of this law that exempted drillers from local zoning regulations. That was the one of several issues, but one of them that they looked at.
Yeah, that was really a key provision of Act 13, which was this overhaul of the state's natural gas drilling laws that passed in the legislature in February 2012. And so what the Supreme Court did was they looked at this part of the law that essentially gave the state the right to supersede any local zoning restrictions. So what's that mean?
Sure.
Essentially, the court gave power back to local governments to be able to restrict drilling. One person who I talked to about this law in recent weeks kind of said that, you know, you can think of it as before this Supreme Court ruling, a nursing home had more restrictions on where they could and could not build in a town than natural gas operators. So that's kind of an interesting comparison that now has kind of been flipped on its head.
And what the court was saying is essentially that local municipalities have control over zoning as related to natural gas drilling.
That's right. And, you know, now local municipalities are able to say to operators, here, this is a school zone. You can't drill here. This is a residential area. You can't drill here. Or a municipality could be free to open the doors wide for natural gas operators. But what the law says still is that, you know, a town cannot completely rule out natural gas drilling. It needs to be allowed somewhere. But now municipalities will have a little bit more control. How significant that is kind of remains to be seen. One thing that we're working on at State Impact Pennsylvania is taking a look at actually how many of these rural communities already have zoning laws, and not many of them do, quite frankly. So it remains to be seen just how much of an impact this will really have in reality.
And what has been the response from the industry and even the Corbett administration?
Well, right. Even if a significant portion of these rural towns don't have zoning laws, one of the sort of primary drafters of Act 13 told me that that doesn't really matter. The industry doesn't look at this nitty-gritty stuff. If they hear that they might have to be complying not only with state and federal regulations, but with 2,000-plus little municipality regulations, that might turn them away from making some really significant investments.
Mm. Do you think that's true? Looking at how Pennsylvania has grown so dramatically when it comes to natural gas drilling.
Well, right. If we talk about us being suddenly the second largest natural gas producer in the entire country, I mean, you know, there are arguments to be made from both sides. The gas is here. They're still going to get it. And they might, you know, remains to be seen how many hoops they're willing to jump through.
Well, and I know that the Supreme Court, and this is based on some of your reporting, used the Environmental Right Amendment. This is part of their reasoning. But it looks like there's some pushback coming from the Corbett administration or coming from, what, DEP?
Yes, it's coming from the Corbett administration, DEP, and also the Public Utility Commission that regulates the natural gas pipelines that go through the state. So one of the most significant parts of this Supreme Court ruling was that the Supreme Court based the unconstitutionality on this Environmental Rights Amendment, which before this really didn't have much teeth, but that's the part of the state constitution that guarantees the right to clean air, pure water, and environmental protection. That's something that really means a lot to Pennsylvanians. And so before this, it had never been really used in a court case in this way. So this was that's why this has been shown as a very significant victory for the environmental groups. The Corbett administration is now saying, and their lawyers are now saying, that the court really did not, they created a new balancing test by doing that, and that their side didn't have a chance to essentially produce evidence that actually natural gas development may not be such a detrimental effect on the environment.
So what, they're going to go back to court and try to argue the case back once again before the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, what they want is actually they want the Supreme Court to kick that part of the argument down to the lower court. They want the Commonwealth Court that ruled on this last summer to take a look at this particular issue and allow essentially the state to present more evidence. But, you know, the justices themselves will actually have to decide on whether or not they're going to allow that reconsideration.
There was it looks like the Supreme Court also looked at this quote-unquote Dr. Gag order.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Right. So the Dr. Gag rule, so-called, is a part of Act 13 that deals with the kind of information that physicians get when they're treating patients who claim that they may have been exposed to the chemicals that are used in natural gas drilling. The law allows physicians to get a complete list of the chemicals, including the ones that are labeled a trade secret that the industry doesn't want to be shared publicly for competitive reasons. And some physicians say that the law is actually a little too vague, that it doesn't really protect them fully from being able to share that information, being able to tell a patient you were exposed to XYZ, sharing that information with the medical community to try to come to some understanding about what the public health impacts are. The state, on the other hand, says that that's not true. They're crying foul. They're saying that there's never been one case where a physician has not been able to share information. The Department of Health last year tried to kind of reassure. They sent a letter to the medical society saying it's all good. But what these physicians really want is for the legislature to step in and kind of clarify that language a little bit, have more specific protections for physicians.
And does it look like the legislature will do that? It has an appetite for dealing with this issue?
Well, I think with all the other questions about Act 13 right now, there's a chance that the lower court, which is going to be taking on this question of what we call severability in legal terms, looking at whether the rest of Act 13 can stand, considering these portions that the Supreme Court struck down. So I've heard from some folks that they wouldn't be surprised if the entire law gets scrapped and they have to start over. Others really hope that that won't happen, but everything is just so up in the air right now, and some folks were just so shocked by this ruling. They say anything can happen, Marty.
And that's Katie Colinari, reporter covering energy and the environment for State Impact Pennsylvania and for WHYY, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, doing kind of a catch-up on natural gas drilling in Pennsylvania, a fast-growing state when it comes to natural gas production, some of it controversial as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9 That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to talk about what's happening here in the Philadelphia region, but let me get Patrick from New Jersey to join our conversation. Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're
very
welcome.
I just wanted to ask the reporter if there's been any, if she's geared any of her investigations regarding any of the financial campaign contributions to the judges that are actually making decisions along these lines.
Patrick, I'm really glad you asked. Actually, we haven't, but we have been looking at just sort of now that the state is sort of coming back and trying to get the court to reconsider some parts of this ruling, we're sort of taking a look at the Supreme Court structure this year. Actually, the judge, Justice Castile, who wrote this 162-page opinion, is actually going to be retiring at the end of the year. So
he got reelected and will be retiring.
Right, exactly. Right. And so, you know, we haven't had a chance to really explore that issue yet, but that's one thing that we're looking at when it comes to, you know, what may happen next.
Patrick, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, and again, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at Marty Moss Cohen. As I said, I do want to talk about what's happening in southeastern Pennsylvania, but how much do you think even this, the governor's race, is going to affect this whole issue of natural gas drilling in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. If anybody has been watching, you know, I think it was just a web ad, but if anybody's been, you know, looking at some of the ads that have come out, you know, Governor Corbett, his first big web ad, kind of had this very dramatic zooming in from outer space into Pennsylvania, where, you know, we're one of the largest energy generators. And so for him, for Governor Corbett, you know, his record on allowing the natural gas industry to really blossom under his watch is a big deal. How it'll play out in the rest of the campaign, some analysts tell me that it really actually won't be such a big deal, because for many Pennsylvanians, the Marcellus Shale and natural gas development isn't really, you know, a part of their everyday lives. It's not something that they really think about so much. That may be changing sometime soon, with Philadelphia kind of taking a bigger role in kind of getting that gas out to market. But for now, you know, in the next year, maybe more of a question of, you know, when we ask the candidates, hey, you've got these brilliant ideas. We look at the Democrats, you know, who always want to tax and spend, they say. So, you know, When we look at the Democratic candidates, how are you going to pay for that? Some of them have already come out and said that they want to enact a severance tax on shale gas, in addition to this impact fee that Act 13 set, which is a flat fee that's paid for each well that gets drilled based on the price of natural gas. And so what some of these Democratic candidates are saying is that a severance tax would be an even better way to get even more money out of this very fast-growing natural gas industry that's here in our state to fund other initiatives like education and transportation.
And we know that Corbett has been in opposition to a severance tax from the get-go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. He has been the biggest defender of this impact fee structure, which he says is a better way of helping local communities that are actually playing host to the drilling operations.
You mentioned the fact that things are happening here in southeastern Pennsylvania, and you've written about the fact that this part of the state is becoming this pretty active energy hub. Help us understand what's happening in our own region.
Yeah, sure. So there's kind of this concept buzzing around town that Philadelphia may become kind of the next Houston East. If, you know, a lot of us remember over the last year, we've seen a huge revival in the local refineries that were, you know, some of them had already shut their doors when all of a sudden shale gas came in and kind of was acted as the savior.
Marcus Hook being one, yes.
Right, Marcus Hook being one, the former 140-year-old Sunoco refinery in South Philadelphia, that's now Philadelphia Energy Solutions. That refinery is taking in two huge train loads a day of oil that's being produced in the Bakken Shale in North Dakota, on trains, by the way, that are the same that have been involved in a lot of these high-profile accidents. So that's kind of a huge, you know, development here that we've already seen. There are a few conversations now about developing a pipeline that would bring Marcellus Shale gas straight from the fields here to Philadelphia. There's also a major project going on to build a natural gas liquids pipeline, which is kind of the more valuable propane and ethane that comes out of the ground along with the methane in western Pennsylvania. Pipeline project will bring that here by the end of the year to be refined at some of these facilities that we have in town. So there's just a lot of energy, if you will, around making Philadelphia a place where this stuff comes to get a bigger value, where it gets shipped overseas, where it gets moved to other places because of our very extensive rail infrastructure. So it'll be some really interesting developments.
And is that the reason, the rail infrastructure? I guess there's also a port, and that's helpful as well. And then talk about pipelines.
Yes, exactly. So right now the pipeline network isn't necessarily as extensive, which is why a lot of these refineries are relying on rail. It also makes them a little bit more flexible. But, you know, there could be even more momentum to build more pipelines to just get more of this stuff here.
And I guess sending it down to, what, Louisiana or along the Gulf Coast in part?
Well, a lot of these refineries really want to capitalize on their ability to just take this stuff in and turn it into, you know, things that we use all the time. There's a major manufacturing business here in Philadelphia. We've got Dow Chemical here. We have Braskem, which is a Brazilian company that relocated its headquarters right here and bought a portion of that Marcus Hook refinery to be able to take these natural gas liquids that are coming here and turn them into just the basic building blocks that we use to make plastic. So that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. We're almost out of time here. I know there's a cracker plant under construction in western Pennsylvania, or nearly?
Under consideration.
Under
still.
Consideration.
Yes. Shell has been kind of, you know, circling this 300-acre site in Beaver County, which is a little bit outside of Pittsburgh, sort of on the Ohio border. And that would be a major economic development project. And that's something that the Corbett administration is really, really pushing for. They pushed to get this project one of the biggest tax breaks in state history. They're touting, you know, the hundreds, possibly thousands of jobs that this cracker plant would bring. And that, again, would also crack or convert these liquids into the stuff that we use to make plastic.
Well, on that note, Katie Colinari, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Reporter covering energy and the environment for State Impact Pennsylvania and for WHYY. And we spoke earlier in this hour with two people with very different opinions about a proposed pipeline through the Pine Barrens or the Pinelands of New Jersey. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, archives, podcasts, and satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We've got hour two waiting in the wings. We'll be right back.